7.
Adopt the fiscal year 2015-16 fall supplemental budget and make other budget-related changes.
Mr. Scott.
Oh, good morning. Andrew Scott, City Budget Director, and I'm joined with by Jessica Kennard, City Bump Coordinator. Briefly today, we had a work session on the fall bump last week, so I won't go into a lot of detail. But from a process standpoint, we are going to be discussing the fall bump today, take any amendments, if there are any, proposed as needed, and then a vote will be taken next week. And that's to ensure that we have the correct DJC 5-day notification so that we can have another public hearing again for next week for public testimony. We can also take testimony today and next week.
So we'll be scheduled for a hearing next week, hearing and adoption next week, not just second reading.
Yeah, it's technically not a second reading. It feels a lot like a first and second reading, but budget ordinances don't need to have the first and second reading. So anyway, we'll be taking testimony today and next week as well. So very briefly, in terms of the fall bump, the supplemental budget that you have in front of you today contains an increase in general fund appropriation of about $6.6 million. That's a combination of $4.6 million in encumbrance carryovers, revenue and program carryovers, $1.4 million in excess beginning fund balance, and about $500,000 in bureau-generated revenue. Per city financial policy, a minimum of 50% of the $1.4 million excess balance must go to capital set-aside, major maintenance and replacement projects. The remainder falls to unrestricted contingency. And so the proposed budget, the proposed bump in front of you exceeds this, this minimum capital infrastructure investment with a $1.7 million investment in major maintenance and infrastructure costs. And the two projects we talked about last week, there's the 911 Center uninterrupted power supply, and then also $1 million for the Sears Center occupancy needs. There are also $5.6 million in new general fund expenses in the bump. Again, these are funded by the excess beginning fund balance by reallocating $2.6 million of Portland Building debt service expenditures in the current year and by allocating $1.6 million of unrestricted contingency. And again, those are listed in the ordinance that's before you. And then finally, there are some CalTarget adjustments based on fair wage adjustments, budget notes, and then also a $10 million increase in Portland Housing Bureau's current appropriation level target. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions? Andrew, Jessica. And is it time, perhaps, before we take public testimony, to put amendments on the table?
I think amendments, yeah.
Okay. So proposed amendments.
Mayor, I have a proposed amendment. Okay. I'll pass this down. My amendment would be to fund the Age-Friendly Portland Initiative to the tune of $51,765.57 from unrestricted contingency funds. And if I can get a second. I'd be happy to discuss it. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Very briefly, colleagues, as you know, this is a partnership with Portland State University that dates back to 2010 when the council adopted the Age-Friendly Portland Plan. Portland was the first city in America to be designated age-friendly by the World Health Organization. Since then, the implementation work associated with this plan has been led by Portland State University on a volunteer basis. Alan Delatorre, Margaret Neal, community members, and student volunteers have done great work, but it's all been done on a volunteer basis. We have asked them to play a leadership role and to step up, and I believe it's now our turn to support them. Or quite frankly, colleagues, I fear that this partnership will be strained beyond repair. And we have an opportunity in this bump to not only support their broader work, but to specifically support their work with the Age-Friendly Housing Committee in looking at ways of ensuring that our future housing stock is accessible to older adults.
Okay.
I might speak to the motion also. I seconded it despite my reservation about funding things that are expected to be ongoing as part of the bump process. We're already funding things that are expected to be going ongoing as part of the bump process, so that's one thing. But secondly, I agree with Commissioner Fish that this is a priority and that it's a relatively small amount of money in order to both preserve a great relationship and leverage all of the other resources we get with this program at PSU.
And if the council makes this adjustment, contingency will still stand at?
It'll be just over $1 million, $1.1 million currently. Actually, it's $1,145,000, so it will be just under $1.1 million.
Okay.
And Mayor,
is it an ongoing request or a one-time?
It's a one-time. So we fully understand that we have to make the case again.
Okay. Any other amendments? Let's take up other amendments. We should vote to accept that amendment and then take testimony, and we'll take up other amendments. So, roll call.
Novick.
Just yell.
You can vote from there.
A lot of drama, Steve.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, other amendments to propose?
So I'm not clear in terms of the budget notes whether the allocation of the second part of the costs at the Phase 1 Parks employee conversion to union and bargaining unit jobs, is that already in the proposal, or is that something that I need to...
So it's not based on the email exchanges yesterday. I do have a proposed amendment if you'll
okay. pass yeah.
I'm going to be moving the amendment that Andrew is passing out right now. And just to refresh everybody's memory, or for the public watching at home, the proposed budget adjustment includes $900,000 as from contingency as part of that cost, which the employees are already in the new positions and already incurring costs. It leaves an estimated $700,000 that's not yet funded, and this amendment would, with the mayor's guidance, leadership, would require all of the bureaus to help pay for that. So the amendment is, it does say that the city budget office will set aside $900,000 of general fund unrestricted contingency, and then we will add and $700,000 from general fund compensation set aside in this fiscal year for personnel cost increases associated with the Portland Parks and Recreation arbitration agreement.
Okay, I'll second that. So, Andrew, describe how this will work. We have a compensation set aside overall. It's it will now be we'll have a call on that of $700,000. What will remain for other adjustments that are needed for bureaus that need to access that comp set aside for the rest of the year?
Right. So the compensation set aside currently stands at $6.5 million. Setting aside this $700,000 would reduce it to about $5.8 million, a little bit more than that. And it would reduce bureau compensation set-asides proportionally, again, based on how many personnel, what their costs are within that. And so we did look at that very briefly this morning. Obviously, police and fire are the largest in terms of personnel costs. So it would reduce police bureaus compensation set-aside by about $350,000 and fires by about $187,000. Parks is the third largest, and they would be reduced by about $75,000, and then other bureaus much smaller amounts than that. And as we discussed at last week's work session, what this amendment does is it essentially spreads that $700,000 to all city bureaus. So the guidance, if it passes, that we will give city bureaus as a result is to expect less compensation set aside available and manage accordingly for the rest of the fiscal year.
Essentially, this is giving all of the bureaus notice that we do have this unexpected cost in this fiscal year, and that we will all need to tighten our belts in order to be able to pay that, given that we don't have a large quantity of contingency left.
Andrew, what's the impact of BOAC?
thank you. $19,322.
And colleagues, my expectation, too, and in discussion with the city budget office, is that if it turns out that any of the bureaus look like they're going to not be able to make that, that there may be additional requests in the spring budget adjustments. I couldn't responsibly, as the commissioner in charge of Portland Park and Recreation, continue at our current level of service without making cuts unless we're sure that we are going to be spreading this year's costs citywide.
And Commissioner Fritz, just for clarification, if we adopt this amendment, we are, in essence, setting aside this money, but then the next step is we have to determine what we are going to invest on what schedule. So that this does not decide the underlying question. This just allocates the available funds.
Now, this is just for this year, which we've already decided, the Phase 1. This doesn't address the question of Phase 2. So this is what we're spending this year to pay staff who are currently doing the job and have been since the summer.
This funds the agreed upon Phase 1 approach that
Correct.
We discussed as a council?
Correct.
Okay.
And the reason for the set-aside, in total, this would set aside $1.6 million, which was at the low end of the estimates for Phase 1. We think, though, working with the Parks Bureau, we're headed towards that low end. But when we get to the spring bump, we will have a much more certain estimate as to what the actual costs are. To the extent they come in less than $1.6 million, we'd be able to allocate some of this money back. To the extent it comes in more, we'll need to find other sources.
So I'm go ahead, Dan, questions?
So explain the compensation set aside.
So compensation set aside, every year we take the increase from cost of living and health benefit increases, and we budget it separately from a bureau budget for 1 year on a one-time basis. The rationale for that is in most bureaus, there are vacancies that occur during the year, and they can fund those cost increases through those vacancy savings. This has been a long-time practice of the city, and it's a little bit of a cost-saving mechanism. But essentially, if you are fully staffed all year long, you will need to come in the spring bump and request your share of the compensation set aside because your adopted budget does not have enough to pay for all of your employees for a full year wages.
So we're talking about the compensation set aside for the current fiscal year?
The current fiscal year, right. And so what this means is that bureaus, again, as they're and you know, police and fire usually request and receive most of their compensation set aside every year. They don't always spend it every year, but they usually request it. And this means that they will have less available to request. So they may need to hold some vacancies for longer as a result. I use those two. This is true of all bureaus. Those two, though, are obviously the largest share of the compensation set aside.
Does fire have vacancies? Fire and rescue?
They do have vacancy savings, although, again, fire generally requests most of its compensation set aside, and depending on the year, some years they spend most of it and some years they don't.
Yeah, I'm supportive of this approach, even though it does mean that all of our bureaus, all of our general fund bureaus are going to be asked to run a little lean. That's more difficult than others in some bureaus. It's difficult in fire because they're close to fully staffed. It'll be difficult in police, not because they're close to fully staffed. They got lots of vacancies, but because we're burning overtime at an enormous rate, because we're short-staffed and we've had the worst year on record for gang violence, and so the gang unit and neighborhood patrol folks have been using a huge amount of overtime. Blessedly, that rate of activity has fallen off in the last couple of weeks, and we can hope and pray that that's the case for the rest of the year. But it's been bad in terms of their use of overtime. So when we get to the spring bump, we're going to have a clear-eyed look at where we are in each of these bureaus. But the other reason I'm supportive of this is that we're in a partnership with a labor organization here that has won an arbitration case and where we have a moral responsibility to make good on our need to pay our employees appropriately. And we, in effect, need to show that we're taking every available dollar and dedicating it to this work. Because we have to work together on a transition over time. And so that's why I'm prepared to do this, is to show that we really are serious about finding all available dollars in the city's budget to make good on our responsibility. And knowing that even in a relatively healthy, stable, more stable general fund budget than we had a couple of years ago, there's not a lot of wiggle room in this budget. We still have 50 less police officers than we had in 2012, 2013. You know, we have firefighters who are paid for by a grant that will have to be returning to general fund support in the next budget. We have a housing responsibility that we've all committed to, and we have a Parks Bureau that's doing great work, serving a lot more kids with community centers that are open and free, and where we need to take better care of our employees. So it's going to be a challenging budget year. This just makes, I think, really puts us all on notice, including all of our bureaus, that everyone needs to operate very efficiently and very prudently, even though, again, we have a healthier budget than we had a couple of years ago. So I hope that message is understood and received throughout the city family. Other amendments? Sorry, we need to take a roll call vote on accepting this amendment, and then we'll take testimony. So roll call on the amendment, please.
Novick?
I'm very sympathetic to the intent here. I confess I haven't consulted thoroughly with BOEC as to whether they can handle that $19,000. So with the caveat that I need to talk to them about it between now and next week, aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, colleagues. This is a citywide issue and needs a citywide solution, and Parks is not able to absorb this level of a cut without making programmatic and personnel cuts. So this, we will be having some very challenging conversations in the main budget next year. This is the right thing to do for this one. Aye.
Aye.
Sultan?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, any other amendments to propose? All right, thank you both very much. Any public testimony on the fall bump as now amended?
Yes, we have five people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Terry Bernier, Ted Bryan, and Erica Askin.
Good afternoon. It is now afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Bernier, and I've been working for the City of Portland as a seasonal part-time employee at East Portland Community Center for over 13 years. 6 years ago, my life was turned upside down. My husband of 30 years was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. We were the average middle-class family. This changed overnight. Talking with our financial advisor, I was told it would be nearly impossible at my age to find a full-time benefited position. When my husband passed away, I was given the maximum 1,200 hours a year for a seasonal part-time employee, but that did not afford me to live without dipping into what little savings I had. 2 years ago, my oldest son and three grandkids moved in with me. Being a single parent, he was not able to afford to live on his own and provide for his family. I was given the opportunity to become a 30-hour temporary benefited city employee with a living wage of $15.02 an hour. With this increase in wage, I've been able to afford some basics that I wasn't able to afford before. This temporary position is helping me to be able to feel a bit more comfortable that I'll be able to stay in my home of 30 years while still able to help raise my grandchildren in a familiar and safe environment. I understand there's an amendment being presented and that I'm in favor of spreading the cost of this beyond phase one because the city's budget has been for too long been carried on the backs of the park workers. I appreciate the city has stepped up to provide more rec workers with a living wage and that these temporary jobs be brought into the budget as a permanent position and to be funded on an ongoing basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon, I mean.
Hi. I'm Ted Bryan. I work at the Community Music Center in Southeast Portland. And as a result of phase one, I was also temporarily appointed to a recreation leader position. For me, it's a half-time position. I work 20 hours a week. Before this, I was working in the customer service representative two position. And my job has not really changed, but my benefits and my wage, of course, have changed. And as a result of that, I am living with much more financial stability right now, and I also have a regular work schedule. Before this, I was sort of roughly doing 20 hours a week, but there was always uncertainty. And so now I have a set schedule, and that's been really beneficial for me personally, and it's also been very beneficial for our organization at the Community Music Center. What I do there requires a lot of site-specific knowledge, and it requires a lot of familiarity with the community. We have a very close community there. We have families who are bringing their children in for lessons for, you know, 14 years of their lives. And I can tell that, you know, I really value being a part of that community and connecting with them, and I can tell that the customers appreciate having stability and continuity there and someone who knows their situation. And I would encourage that investing in stability for Parks employees at my position in the long term is a very good idea because it strengthens the community centers. My position is we have a fairly small staff, and what I do is really important to the integrity of the center. And I think that's true at a lot of other centers around the city. And so I want to thank you for putting this phase one into play because it's been a big help for us. And I think that moving forward, Really, this would be could be seen as investing in the strength of our communities in Portland, because you know, having workers who feel that they're valued and that they're fairly compensated for their time is really important. That feeds into the strength of the organizations and sort of that feeling, the well-being, investing in the well-being of the workers, it pays forward, it trickles down. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Erica Askin. I'm the business manager of Laborers Local 483. I don't think I can say it any more astutely than our new members have just said it, but I really appreciate Commissioner Fritz and the mayor's amendment and your vote on that amendment for funding citywide of the Phase 1 arbitration compliance. I think also their statements are a reflection of what happens when you bring people into a union, that these very important voices are now shared. I also appreciate, Mayor, your comment earlier that the community centers are a core function of city services. And on that point, in the future, if the city keeps on investing in the community centers and looking at it as a citywide problem, as Commissioner Fred said, because the contingent labor problem is a citywide problem. But in the future, if they keep on investing in this way, there's the possibility that all of these new teen mentors that are currently working in the centers under your initiative will now have fair wages and benefits. And I agree that these kinds of services, like others that are provided in the community centers, are core services to the city. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, I think we have a couple more folks signed up. Thank you all for being here.
Michael Bunelcore and Jill Smith.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. Thanks for having us here today. I'll be brief. Jill is going to speak to an issue that we are asking for you to co-invest with us to help solve. Recently, when Kurt Krieger presented the State of Housing Report, he said that one of the indicators of the rental market is the success rate of the housing choice voucher lease-up rate. And we are now at a level that's below 75%, which is considered a significant problem. And around the statewide average is now, I think, around 50%. So as bad as it is, there is the possibility of it becoming worse. So again, Jill will speak to that, but I just wanted to take the opportunity to say that Commissioner Saltzman and his staff and the Portland Housing Bureau staff have been really tremendous partners in helping us look at this issue. And the investment request before you is one of a number of ways that we are working to address this issue, both sort of programmatically and at policy levels. So know that we are working hard, and in all of the ways that we are partnered together around working through this housing crisis that we face, we're just deeply grateful for the partnership and your consideration for this investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. I had this morning down. The Housing Choice Voucher Program, known as Section 8 in our community, is a huge resource for our community. And it's a very unique program, which makes it the most popular one that people really want access to, because it was designed to provide choice. People can choose to live in a good neighborhood, near a good school, near medical facilities, near transportation. And unfortunately, that choice is diminishing because of the market. It's a market-driven program, and the market is having a really negative impact on our ability to use this amazing resource. Home Forward provides assistance for up to just under 10,000 households with vouchers. We have that many vouchers. It's approximately $70 million a year that comes into the community that Home Forward distributes to landlords. The program is designed to serve families earning under 50% of area median income. At Home Forward, over 82% of the people we serve earn less than 30% of area median income. And just so you know what that amount is, for one person, they earn $15,450 a year. And for two, it's $17,650 a year. And these are the people.
That's 30%?
That's 30%. Yeah. So that really helps you to understand who these folks are. These are the folks that would be homeless without our help. And unfortunately, even those with vouchers are struggling as they're being asked to move due to rent increases, affordability issues, and utilizing that voucher. I wanted to provide you with a few current data points that are effective right now today to help put this in perspective for you. Home Forward, between September of 2014 and September of 2015, put about 1,700 vouchers in people's hands coming off of our waiting list. Unfortunately, we have a success rate right now of about 72%. Who is getting those vouchers? I told you about their income. Something else you should be aware of is 60% of those voucher holders that were successful finding a place are people with seniors, that are seniors and people with disabilities. 44% of those vouchers are being utilized by people of color. Some other things I thought you'd find interesting is, while we're down to a success rate of 72%, really because of the market conditions, our VASH voucher success rate is 78.5%, and we're doing better with that. And the reason we're doing better is because of the supports that folks need that have high barriers that are low income. And that's what the Section 8 Success Fund is all about, is trying to mirror some of those things that we know work. Landlords are critical. We continue to do landlord outreach. We've trained well over 1,000 landlords in the last year, all over the state, actually. The state bill with the Landlord Guarantee Fund is helping us a lot, and your support is truly appreciated. And just to reiterate what Michael said previously, Home Forward's Board of Commissioners is aware of our request to you, and staff plans to present them with a resolution requesting additional funding that matches your authorization that it sounds like you'll be giving next week. And again, thank you. We appreciate this.
Thank you. That really helps illustrate the importance of this.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody understands the success rate. So these are people that get a voucher and they can't find housing within what's the period of time?
So what happens, to put it in perspective, is people will wait on a list. The lucky few that made the lottery that have been on a list, right now people have been on a list over 3 years. They go through quite a bit of work to actually get the voucher. They attend a three-hour class. They turn in a lot of paperwork and income verifications. And then after they attend the class and have that voucher in their hand, which is very valuable, we give them initially 4 months to find a unit, and we extend that to 6 months as needed. Right now, the average household is taking about 80 days when they're successful, and unfortunately, we're having a high number that aren't.
And if they're unsuccessful, they have to surrender the voucher.
They do.
Is that right?
They do, yes.
Right. And so we should be up around 90. You're historically been up in the 90%.
We were in 2011, shortly after Commissioner Fish led the Section 8 task force. We're still aggressively doing everything we were doing at the time of the task force and more, much more. This is the market.
If I could just add a comment, the fact that we're down to 72% is not a reflection on Jill, who is arguably the most influential person in Section 8 policy in the country. It's not a reflection on Michael being the new ED. It's not a reflection on Dan. It's a reflection on the fact that Congress has chosen to use these market-based tools. And just like low-income tax credits, which tanked during the recession, Section 8 vouchers don't work very well if you don't have an inventory of affordable units that people can rent. It is the underbelly of a market-based system. But I, Dan, I thank you for bringing this forward. I think this is a great investment. Jill, I thank you for all the work you've done to streamline Section 8, because I think we're generally recognized as being one of the more friendly, landlord-friendly programs, thanks to your work. And I also want to say that I appreciate the work you did on the low-income discount task force that the Water Bureau led. Mm-hmm. And colleagues, for years there's been a solution that's eluded us as to how to get the discount to people that don't have a water meter. It's mm-hmm. a fundamental flaw in our system. But we're very proud of the partnership with Home Forward and Michael and Jill's commitment to pass the discount through to Section 8 voucher holders. That's an example where if you have the right partner, you can overcome some of the obstacles. And so we are looking to get as much of that discount to existing Section 8 voucher holders. It's not easy, but we couldn't ask for a better partner. So thank you both.
Thank you. I neglected to tell you a really important point that is part of the Success Fund. HUD sets their fair market rents based on three-year-old American Community Survey data. They've shared that with us. And when you're in this kind of market, three-year-old data lags behind a little bit, wow. 20 to 30%. Yeah. So we have partnered with you all, hopefully, as well as our neighboring housing authorities. There's three neighboring, and we've all gone in together to contract with Washington State University, who has successfully submitted a survey meeting HUD's requirements to have Seattle's fair market rents reset. And they're in that process of doing that right now. We've all contributed to that effort. That would result in us being able to offer higher payment standards, enabling folks to get into more units.
Wow, that's great. Hope that works. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good work. Yes.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item? If not, then the ordinance as amended passes to next week's calendar for another hearing and adoption. Thank you all very much. We have a few items remaining from the morning calendar. I'd like to try to power through those and give the council at least a little bit of a lunch break.